This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined by Bradley Chambers. And for the first time, we have a sponsor for this show. This episode of Out of School is sponsored by DisplayNote, and we'll talk more about that app as we go through the show, or you can visit them at displaynote.com. How are you doing, Bradley?
It's been a good week so far. How about you?
It's been a busy week. We've just opened the school.
So,
we are up and running.
Yeah, that's that initial rush of excitement and fear and just really hoping that your network holds up, I guess.
All of these things, yeah. And we have survived it for the most part. But we're recording on Tuesday, and on yesterday I did the same one-hour lesson six times in a row, which was Introduction to iTunes U. So we're going to take some of the lessons from my preparations and my opening day, and we're going to just make the show all about iTunes U.
Sounds good.
Okay. So I guess the first thing to talk about is, what is iTunes U, right? And a lot of people are aware of the brand name iTunes U because for several years, really since the iPod era, there was a space in the iTunes store that was called iTunes U. And what you could do there was basically from universities and only universities, you could download essentially playlists of video and audio and occasionally a PDF, but mostly it was audio video content. And that was fine in the days of the, you know, the video iPod and things. That was the kind of things you could do with it. And one of the things that I found, having sort of looked at several courses on that, was that it was actually quite hard to follow the progression of learning that the teachers intended, because it was just sort of watch this video and then watch this video and then watch this one. And the materials that went around that course were never really very clear about what you were supposed to do once you'd watched the lecture, sort of thing. So as most people probably know, back in January of this year, Apple had a big education event in New York, and there were three things were announced there, one of which was iTunes U, but they also introduced iBooks Author, and they introduced the concept of the multi-touch textbook, which is what you make with iBooks Author, and the fact that several textbook companies, textbook publishers, were changing their pricing model slightly to make it more affordable on a one-to-one basis in the classroom. And a lot of people made a huge big deal about the textbooks in that event, that, you know, that Houghton Mifflin and all these various other companies were really cutting the price of the textbook when they went digital. But I kind of realized quite quickly that I thought iTunes U was the sort of sleeper hit of that event. And I think over the past 8 or 9 months, that's kind of borne out a little bit in what I see talking to different schools, and certainly what we've planned to do at Cedars as well, is that iTunes U was actually the game changer in that event. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. What is iTunes U now? So iTunes U now is actually an app that runs on iOS. It's a universal app, so it runs on the iPad, it also runs on the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And what you can do with iTunes U is you can publish a course. They've renamed the old style playlist of video and audio as a collection, and there's now this new kind of thing called a course. And a course is built around a progression of learning, and it has materials associated with it. So we'll explain a little bit about what those kind of things can be. There's essentially four parts to it. There's course information, which is 3 or 4 pages of static information at the start of your course. You get 3 by default when you create a course. You get an overview of the course, you get a page about the instructor, and you get an outline for the course. You can add as many other pages as you want. I'll give you one example from what I'm doing with iTunes U at school this year. Is I'm teaching a class in which we do Ruby programming, and then there's some Unix commands that go along with that. And this is these kids' first experience of Unix. So what I've done there is put in an additional info page, which is handy Unix commands, and it has things like ls and cde and just a very brief explanation of each of those. So that's the info section of iTunes U. There's also materials, and materials are any kind of digital asset that teachers want the students to have during the course. So in previous times, in the old iTunes U, those materials could just be video, audio, and PDF files. But now what you can do in a course is you can link to, you can upload video and audio, certainly, but you can also upload arbitrary types of files. You can upload images. you can also link to things on Apple storefronts. And this is really quite powerful for people who want to follow a course in a sort of self-paced fashion, is you can link to electronic books in the iBookstore. You can link to apps in the App Store, in the iOS App Store, I should specify, not the Mac App Store, obviously, because you're running on iOS. But you can also link to URLs as well. So you can link to anything that Apple sells through a storefront or out to the web in general. And if there's a limitation of all of this, one of the big limitations is that the iTunes U app only runs on iOS. So if you have a mixed platform, this is one of these things that you maybe can't necessarily take advantage of in the same way. So we decided at Cedars, I started showing it to people, you know, within a couple of weeks of the announcement. I signed the school up without asking anybody. I signed the school up straight away for access to iTunes U. We'll talk more about access to iTunes U in a little while. And I started experimenting with it. And I think more than just sort of telling you what we did with this, I want to use this as an example of explaining how we think about adopting technology at Cedars. And one of the ways that we look at this is that we change one thing and then we wait quite a long time. So we're 2 years after we introduced the iPad into schools, and we changed the platform, and then we wanted to wait and see what the next level sort of requirements were. Because you never know, I don't think. You can't plan these things 5 stages in advance. So we changed the platform, we brought in the iPad, and they said, well, okay, how is this going to change things? And we really kind of sat back for 2 years and didn't do anything else. And because the thing is, and this is almost Apple-like, if you will, that if you don't know what the best thing is to do, the best thing is to do nothing, right? So essentially, I did nothing else after I deployed the iPad for a couple of years. And what came out of that was, at least in the secondary department, what came out of it was that document distribution was difficult and kids were being overwhelmed by email. And that's kind of a fun problem to have in one sense, because it means that people are actually using your email system very heavily. But what we found was that teachers setting homework by email, some of the younger kids in secondary were kind of getting overwhelmed by constant email coming out, and they hadn't really figured out how to process their email properly. I guess maybe we hadn't identified that as a teaching need as such either, but they were sort of dropping the ball on certain topics because they hadn't figured out that they had to sort of extract that actionable information from their email and put it into some other system. I guess we don't teach GTD in schools yet, but that's probably coming too. So we identified some problems, right? Productivity and document distribution. And what we did was, some teachers were experimenting over these past 2 years with small scale, one class at a time sort of solutions to these problems. Some teachers used a shared Google Calendar for homework. Some teachers used things like Dropbox for document distribution, you know, and I personally was using email for document distribution because my documents weren't that big. But some other teachers had documents that were 50 to 80 megabytes. And they were asking me, how do I get that out over email? And of course, most email systems don't want to let you send more than about 20 megs as an attachment.
I believe the current limit in Google Apps is 25 megabytes as well.
Yeah. So that's kind of was a limit on the kind of things that we were doing. And as we started to look at even richer materials, such as videos and experimenting a bit more with iBooks Author and making bigger multi-touch textbooks, those things very quickly got beyond the size of what you could send by email. So we're looking for solutions for that. So it's a very delicate trick to play when you're doing that in a school, because what you can sometimes end up with is, if you let people go off on their own, they start to think that they've invested in something, therefore that system will continue forever. Your teachers can get very kind of set in their ways. Once they've gone to all the great effort of learning something new, they want a massive payoff for years and years after that. But I was kind of fortunate in that my teachers were not, they're very flexible mentally, if you like. And I said, you know, go and try these things. You know, my math teacher came to me and said, how about using Dropbox? I said, go ahead and try it. Let me know how it goes and we'll see if that makes sense to do it for everybody, but it might not. So over the past couple of years, we identified these problems. And then what we did was we started looking for one solution for the whole school that would solve those problems. And again, I changed you kind of came along at the time that we were looking for that solution. So in terms of the technology adoption, it's very important that we take your, and what I'm saying is take your time, experiment, but then you just, you kind of step up the whole school in one go. So over those 2 years, there were certainly teachers who had not experimented with anything at all. They were just doing the email thing that we started in 2010. But now what I've done with iChangeU, as we've adopted iChangeU in the secondary, is I've taken all of the teachers up to that next level where they've got a robust homework setting system and document distribution system. And those teachers who had experimented, well, they're happy to now be on some kind of supported thing that's going to go forward. So that's kind of just some of the sort of Jedi mind tricks, if you like, that can help you get through a transition like that.
Well, and you're almost beta testing different platforms to see what really fits best. And by not endorsing one in the beginning, you're not limited to just that in the future. So let's say with the Dropbox situation, let's say something didn't work well in Dropbox. Well, instead of having to come up with a real workaround, you can say, well, that's great information to have. We'll keep that in mind as we explore this further. So you literally were almost beta testing in different grades and different subjects, different solutions, and see what is the best fit. Because had iTunes U not came along, you may have had to use a Dropbox under a Dropbox for Teams type scenario.
Yeah, and the other thing we were looking at the same time was Evernote as another approach. And I know you and I are big Evernote fans, but I didn't feel it was exactly the kind of thing we were looking for to adopt for the students in school.
Yeah, I had a situation where we've had some employees that have decided to want to use Evernote, and I have to be real hesitant to find that balance to want to be helpful, and I want to enable people to use the applications that fit their workflow for either lesson planning or collaboration with other employees, but also understanding that I've got to support applications. So if I give my stamp of approval, then when they have issues, I may have to deal with that. And that kind of goes back to our iCloud discussion from last week of using a platform that you're not totally in control over.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's also the case that sometimes one solution will work at small scale. You know, for example, the Dropbox thing, one teacher getting his class to sign up for Dropbox account so he could share a file with them, that's you know, sustainable. But to have me go around the entire school and get every pupil signed up for Dropbox is, you know, that solution doesn't necessarily scale up. Now, this was in the days before Dropbox for Teams came out. And even today, Dropbox for Teams is, in my opinion, too expensive and also too much data for schools. But anyway, you know, in the days before a management console for Dropbox, you know, Andy Crichton doing that for his math class is fine, but me doing it for 80 or 90 kids is probably just, you know, the complexity just scales up too quickly.
And when it's school-wide, you're the person that's seen. Again, when you've got one teacher that wants to do it, that's fine, and they're willing to take on that work. But when it's the school-approved way to do it, then it becomes your job to roll it out, to make it work, and then to troubleshoot it later. And you're right. You really have to choose solutions that scale with you as you grow. Even if you guys grew by, say, another 100 students and you built another building, what scales with you? You have to make those decisions on the front end.
Yeah, and iChangeU is interesting in that it's kind of already pre-scaled, if you like, because it's part of the iTunes store, that we know that a lot of those things can just get very, very big, and that's fine. So the process of coming to iChangeU, the way we kind of came to it was there was 4 months of sort of talking about it and me trying to sort of, I guess that what was happening was I was learning how to explain iChangeU to other people. Because it's not immediately obvious just how powerful it is. And part of the reason for that is because if you're just a consumer of iTunes U and you download it from the App Store and you look at the course catalog, that's great. And in many ways, we're a bit blasé about how great that is, that you can get all these amazing courses. But you don't see the back end of it until you've signed up for it. And we'll talk about the front and back end in a little bit. But in many ways, teachers looked at the front-end courses and they looked at Stanford and Duke and Harvard and so on, and it looked really, really slick. And they're going, well, how much work must that be to create something like that? And can Little Cedar School really go in the same store as Harvard, you know? And what I did was I spent a lot of time exploring the back end and trying to understand how soft an adoption could you actually do of iTunes U. And what I learned in that period was that you can actually adopt iTunes U very, very gradually. And I'll tell you how we're going to do that in a second. But let me just, before we do that, explain what the back end looks like in iTunes U. Basically, there's two ways you can sign up for iTunes U. You can sign up as an individual teacher, and that gets you access to a website called iTunes U Course Manager. If you sign up as an institution, you get access to a thing called iTunes U Public Site Manager. And Public Site Manager, if you have a presence on the iTunes U storefront, Public Site Manager is how you manage that. Okay? Course Manager is every individual teacher has their own login for their own course manager, and that's how they build their own course. Now, the interaction between the two is that if I want to take a teacher's course and take it out of their hands and put it on my public-facing site, then there's a series of URLs that get exchanged between me and the teacher. The teacher will submit the course to me. I will add it to my public site manager, and then I publish the changes to the store. And that's how a course goes from being built by hand by a teacher to going on the store. So there's these two separate parts to it. The bit that most, there's only one public site manager login per institution, but there's multiple course manager logins. And what happens there is that I, as the administrator, will take my teacher's Apple IDs, put them into the public site manager, and then they, with their Apple ID, get access to logging into Course Manager, where they can build their course. That's really the end of what I want to say about Public Site Manager for the moment. And I want to focus a bit more on Course Manager. What you can do in Course Manager, it's all web-based, so you don't have to have a Mac to build an iTunes U course, is one of the questions I get asked quite a lot when I talk about this. You do have to have Safari, though, because the whole web front end only works in Safari, even on a Mac. You can't use Google Chrome or anything like that. Interestingly, and this is one of my kind of complaints about iTunes U, is that Course Manager only works on Safari on a desktop computer. There's no access to iTunes U Course Manager from an iOS device, which is a bit unfortunate, and we'll certainly talk in my section called Problems with iTunes U, or you know, temporary complaints, I should say. We'll definitely talk about some of the things that we've, the sort of sharp corners that we've run into. But let's assume we've now got access to iTunes U. What's the simplest adoption you can possibly do in iTunes U? And the way I sold it to teachers was I said, look, you're used to sending email to your class. You're used to putting attachments on it, and you're used to setting homework, right? Take iTunes U Course Manager. Give me your course outline, which everybody's written their course outline at the start of the year. Give me that, and we'll put it into iTunes U Course Manager. And then all you do is you just sort of imagine that this is like email, right? So for this section that you're on, this unit that you're on, you'll send out a message to the class, and then there's maybe an attachment that goes along with that, and so on. And it was really as simple as that. A lot of teachers, when I first showed it to them, they said, I've got PowerPoints and I've got Word documents and so on. Do I need to convert all of those into Apple formats in order to use iTunes U? And the answer was no. You know, the most Apple format people had to convert to was PDF. And that was really no hardship to anybody. If you are using video, you have to be a little bit careful that the video you post can be played on an iOS device. But that's most video these days. So the adoption ramp was very, very simple. And really, at a school level, for this first year, all we are requiring that teachers do is use iTunes U to set their homework, right? So every time you're setting homework, just put a post in your course that says, here's your homework, here's the deadline, right? Because what happens there is when your kids are subscribed to your course, they will get on the left-hand side of their bookshelf, they will get what we're sort of referring to as the inbox. And that shows all the posts from all the teachers that are teaching your courses. And then you can flip that over and only see the assignments, right? And all these assignments have due dates associated with them. So that way, we've sort of turned iTunes U into an automated homework diary, which saves the problem of the kids having to extract their work to be done out of their email and put it into some other system, iTunes, you will just automatically gather it for them.
I think the subscribe button, the subscribe terminology is what makes that so great for teachers, because that's a word they can really get their head around, is that you're subscribed.
Yeah. It's very much, the metaphors are very simple to understand, I think. And we found that already, you know, kids are sort of almost visibly relaxing, if you like, when they look at that and say, well, we're saying here's one icon inside which is all your materials, all your homework, and so on and so on. And one of the nice things that iTunes U does is if you're subscribed to a course and the teacher puts out a new post, you will get a push notification on the lock screen of your iPad about homework or an assignment or something, or even just information from the course. And that's really cool. One of the other sort of ninja tricks that we're doing with that is for parents who have an iOS device of some kind, what we're going to do, and we haven't done this yet, but we're going to do it, is teachers are going to send the subscription URLs home to the parents. So the parents could subscribe on their own iTunes U, and then, what will happen then is when the teacher posts an assignment to the class, the parents will actually get a push notification for that as well. So that neatly solves the problem that we have all the time of the parents wanting to be notified when their children are set homework in class. And, you know, with the best will in the world, sometimes it's hard enough just to remember what homework you said to the class, never mind having to sort of assign the homework to the people's parents as well. So that's, it was funny when I explained that to some classes, I saw quite a few faces drop at just the prospect of the amount of accountability that there's going to be in the system, because they're going to get notified, their parents are going to get notified, and there's really not going to be very many excuses left for not turning in.
I joke with our parents and our students that when we were in school, you know, our report cards and grades, our progress reports were done in 6 and 9 week blocks. And so if you were having problems in a class, you had 6 weeks at least to bring it up before your parents really found out. And then now, if you fail a test, your parents may know in an hour. And you almost feel bad for the kids today, because they really, their parents can keep on top of them with their schoolwork, which ultimately is better for them.
Yeah, you know, it's one of these things. There's a sort of terminology thing that goes around where people talk about learning metrics. And it's almost like there's a sort of fantasy of being able to apply like Google Analytics to every child's brain and turn everything into numbers and charts and tables and so on. And I'm not against testing at all, or some of these, I don't know, psychometric testing or something. That's not really my area, but I just kind of wonder how this isn't it's not a production line, right? And in some ways, you know, this is about as far as I would want to go with this, that there are some parents who certainly want to log into something. They want to see every mark that's broken down, you know, over every topic area. And, you know, and sometimes I kind of wonder, you know, are they just looking at that to see who's at the top of the list or what, you know? But that's a broader discussion than just technology, I'm sure.
Well, do you want to go ahead and take a quick sponsor break?
Let's do that.
We are very appreciative of DisplayNote for sponsoring Out of School this week. And DisplayNote is a brand new app that lets teachers take everything they do on their Windows and Mac, and stream it out to connected devices like an iPad, an Android device, or even another laptop. And on receipt of that content, students can add their own notes, media, annotation, and save and store everything for later for them to review and study with. In collaboration mode, multiple devices can work together on the same content. And in presenter mode, DisplayNote allows your tablet or your smartphone to be used as a wireless presenter tablet and lets you send private messages to a connected device and allows you to view anyone's screen at any time. A classroom license is only $695. It's a one-time fee and allows up to 40 connections. And there are faculty, site, and district licenses available upon request. And go to displaynote.com for further information. And again, we appreciate them sponsoring this week of Out of School. Again, displaynote.com.
Okay, so we were talking about iTunes U and some of the things that you can do with that. And I wanted just to clear up one thing. We were talking earlier about building a course, and there's actually two kinds of course you can build in iTunes U, and there's three levels of security. And this is kind of getting into the deployment, where the rubber hits the road, if you like. But let's talk about security first, right? Teachers often ask, you know, if we adopt iTunes U, does that mean that anybody can see my course? You know, and I had a few teachers who were quite nervous about the idea that the whole world would get to see them learn how to use iTunes U, right? And that's absolutely not the case. You can create courses that are not accessible in the store. There's three levels of security, as I mentioned. Initially, there was just two. There was a public course, which is the type that you would subscribe to. You could search for it in the store, subscribe to it freely and anonymously. And then there was a so-called hidden course. Now, what a hidden course is it's a course that exists in the iTunes store, but it is not searchable and it's not listed on the institution's homepage on the store. So the only way to get access to a hidden course is to have what they call a subscription URL, which is a URL that you can distribute to students and they just tap on it in their email and that will automatically launch iTunes U and subscribe them to the course. Okay. And up until maybe a month ago, those were the only two levels of security. In both cases, you didn't know the names of anybody who was subscribed to your course, and all you could get was a rough count of how many people were subscribed. What they recently provided in a recent upgrade to Course Manager was the idea of a class roster and a completely private course. So what you can do now, and this is now the default for new courses, is you build the course in Course Manager, and then there's an enrollment code, which is a 9-letter code that you can either write on a whiteboard in the class or email to students, and they can go into iTunes U. You scroll down to the bottom and there's an enroll section, a bit like where you would redeem a coupon code in the iTunes store. And you just tap on that and you tap in the enrollment code of the course. And what that does is it sends a subscription request back to the teacher who's running that course. That does require now that you have an Apple ID. So what will happen is, you know, student enrolls in my course. I will get an email back saying student name has requested to subscribe to your course, yes or no. And I can approve or deny that request. That's a little problematic in situations like my school where all the students are using a shared Apple ID. So we've actually deployed not private courses but hidden courses. So all of our courses have URLs that people can anonymously subscribe to, but we're not sharing those URLs. They're not on our website. We're not listing these courses in the store. We're just emailing them to students. But the beauty of the private course is that you can now actually know for a fact who is subscribed to your course. There's a new section in Course Manager called the Class Roster that shows you all the pending requests and the approved and rejected requests, and you can actually block people from re-enrolling in your course, if you like. So that's quite nice in the sense that you actually sort of eventually know who you're talking to, if you like. And that's possibly also very important if you're going to have parents subscribe to it as well, that you can actually approve one by one every single request to your course. So those are the three levels of security. There's a public course that's on the store, the hidden course that allows anonymous subscription but isn't searchable, and then there's the fully private course, which has the class roster and the teacher gets to approve or deny every subscription request. The next thing I'm going to talk about is the two types of course. There's only really one type of course on the store. There's a couple of examples I'll mention of the other type, but the most common course that you'll see on the iTunes U store is what they call a self-paced course. So this is a course that is built, it's complete, and then it's published. And what you do when you create that kind of course is you declare roughly how many weeks you think this should take. But there's no start date and there's no end date because people could be starting at any day of the week. That's the most common kind of course. The other kind of course is called an in-session course. And an in-session course has a definite start date and a definite end date. That's obviously the kind of course that most teachers would use in the classroom. That's the kind we're using. The only real practical difference between an in-session course and a self-paced course is that if you set an assignment in an in-session course, you can give it a deadline because the course is being delivered synchronously with actual class activity. Whereas if you have a self-paced course, you can set assignments, yes, but you can't set a deadline on them because that doesn't make sense to put an explicit date on something when you don't know when somebody's going to start the course. There are one or two in-session courses available in the iTunes U store for the public. And the most famous one, I think, so far is Stanford University have been doing one of their famous iPhone programming courses. And this year they started it and they're actually delivering the public course as an in-session course. So it is listed on the store. You can subscribe to it and you can have the experience of being enrolled in a course, even though it's a kind of public course. It's not, you're not necessarily going to lectures at Stanford at the same time. So those are the two kinds of course. And most, I would say most, if not all, classroom teachers would probably use an in-session course because their courses have a definite start and end date. What we're looking at doing with some of those things, and if you search for Cedar School of Excellence on iTunes U, you'll find I've built four courses so far. And those courses are just designed as professional development for our teachers. So there's four self-paced courses that our teachers can subscribe to and anybody can subscribe to. And there's one about making iTunes U courses. There's one about using iTunes U and iBooks. There's one about Twitter and Flipboard, and there's one about Keynote. So just some kind of things that teachers might want to look at. And, you know, we haven't been promoted in the store. We haven't been on the big storefront. But we're now getting about 180 to 200 subscriptions a day to that course.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and you think our school's only 120 students, you know. That was just, you know, I looked at it and I thought there's a Cedar School and a half every day subscribing to these courses.
If they would only pay half the tuition, you would have a great technology budget.
Well, yeah, suddenly you start to look at the kids in front of you and go, yeah, it's not the same thing for sure, but, you know, it was just those numbers, that's just drive-by traffic on the store. That's not promoted traffic or anything like that. That's just, I guess one thing that boosts those numbers a little bit is if you search for, at least in the UK store, if you search for iTunes U, then our iTunes U course is the first hit in the iTunes U section of the search results.
Do you see any examples where you might use a self-paced course? I'm trying to think of some we use. Maybe if it's a semester-long project where maybe it's preparing for the end of semester exams, and it's a self-paced. You're meant to do it at your own leisure. Or I know here in the States with the ACT and the SAT, if you build a study guide for that, and again, it was self-paced. Do you see Cedars using the self-paced in the future?
Yeah, I can definitely see that coming. I think the first year we're probably not going to build very much like that, although it's conceivable that we might create a few extension courses for sort of really motivated students that will just put together something really quite short, but, you know, they can work through that whenever they get some spare time, you know. But I think what we're doing this year, our adoption profile for this year, if you like, is for us to... We're going to use it in class. We're going to get practice with Course Manager. We're going to get a feel for how you write for this, because we'll mention the pedagogy in a minute because it's quite different. And then I think what we're going to do with some of our courses is we're going to take them and we're going to turn them into self-paced courses that anybody could subscribe to after that. And I think that's the way to do it. I'm teaching a class this year called The History of Technology, which we mentioned that earlier in a previous show. I'm certainly going to try and turn that course into a self-paced course at the end of the year once I've actually built the whole thing, which I haven't done yet.
Yeah, I was planning on using that. So if you'll hurry up and finish that, I may work on that and use that in the spring. I'm kidding.
I'll do my best. so it's interesting. I think one of the things I'm hoping will happen with iTunes U is that our teachers, as they get more familiar with the content of the iTunes U catalog, is that they'll start to reach out and use some of the materials in the catalog as part of their teaching. Now, in many previous years, all of the content there has been too advanced for schools. But since Apple's opened this up to schools, more schools are starting to push their materials onto the store as well. So we're getting a lot more sort of K-12 level material becoming available. Now, I'm not saying we're going to necessarily take anybody else's course and just teach that, But there may be, you know, a lecture or a video or a document in somebody else's course that could be of use to us as well.
Well, and there's another company that's already done something similar to this with digital whiteboards. You know, the two big players in the digital whiteboard space are Smart and Promethean. And we have three Promethean boards. And one of the main reasons we went with them is because of their Promethean Planet website, where teachers can upload their flip charts that they've created, and you can download other teachers. Again, not to necessarily just reteach them, but it may be a good starting point for something you're working on. And again, that can be a sales point for Apple to schools. Say, hey, we've got a lot of content that your teachers can use and can kind of jump off on. Use it as a springboard rather than just a full course.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's certainly going to be an interesting thing. And one of the things that you can do in Course Manager, and this isn't actually exposed unless you can see inside Course Manager, is that you can specify the license for your course. Now, this isn't shown to anybody anywhere on the storefront or in the app, but you actually have the option of all rights reserved or any of the Creative Commons licenses as well. So I don't know what Apple's plans are for that, but that's just something you have to specify when you create a course. And I think that is potentially interesting in the future to see, you know, could it be that we can find Creative Commons stuff and then maybe link straight to that from our course or something like that. I'm not sure. I wanted to mention a little bit about the sort of teaching practice that goes alongside iTunes U. And I want to be very clear here that I really have no idea, right? I can make a guess at what's going on here, but we're very much in the realms of trying things out here. Because what we're sort of doing here is we're slightly blending distance learning and in-person learning a little bit. And I think some teachers will treat it very much as an adjunct to what happens in the class. Other teachers who are maybe a little more completist, and I might put myself in that category, will perhaps try and build their courses to be more fulsome, so that the class could potentially get on with a lot of things without the teacher's necessary direct involvement in driving the classroom every single day. We're going to have a little bit of an acid test of that quite soon in my class, because in September I'm actually going to be out of school for a week or so at a couple of conferences that we booked a long, long time ago before we had to rejig the timetable a little bit. So one of my classes is going to have a few days and a few weeks where I'm not there. So what I'm going to do there is I'm going to try and lean very heavily on iTunes U and see just how much of a normal experience I can still deliver just through iTunes U. And I don't think it will be the same, but it will certainly be much better than the normal thing that kids get when teachers aren't there, which is, here's a worksheet, just get on with it and don't ask me any questions because I can't help you because I'm not your subject teacher.
In a situation where if a school was closed for weather, this could also be used if you're going to have an extended absence. I know a few years ago we were actually out of school for a week due to no power at our school due to some tornadoes that came through the area. And again, assuming you have power and an internet connection, you could still work with your teacher and collaborate and continue some sort of structured lesson. And I think that'll be some great feedback to get from you is, how does school work when you're not there? And if their only information is tell them to turn to iTunes U, that seems like that's going to be a great way to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of motivates me a little bit to try and be richer in the course that I write, because I know that there are going to be a couple of times this year where I'm not going to be in class and I want those kids to still make the kind of progress that they need to make. So we'll see how that goes. It'll be interesting. But there's definitely a divide there between are you using this as an adjunct to in-person learning, or is it really you're doing distance learning and the teacher just happens to be there to help you out? And I think the answer will be different at different stages, and it'll be different for different teachers as well. But again, this is one of these things where we've changed one thing. We're not going to say that we know the answer to the next question, which is, how do you write your iTunes U course? We've got a few best practices that we've already identified, but most of those are around sort of current limitations in the iTunes U software, which we'll mention in a little bit as well. So that this is very much a kind of next step experimental thing. Obviously, we're not throwing out our teachers and just going over to iTunes U. But there is a, there's definitely, I don't want to call it a transition because it's not like we're ending what we used to do, but there's definitely going to be a learning progression. This is what I was saying yesterday to kids. I said, look, nobody's done this before, right? We're amongst the first schools to really put their whole school on iTunes U. Please, kids, you tell me if something goes wrong, you know, because I certainly got that kind of feedback when the iPad first came out to kids as well. They were saying, Mr. Spears, this, it takes me 2 hours to do my homework. It used to take me 1 hour. And I said, well, what is it you're doing? And she's, and the girl I was talking to said, well, I look at my homework on the iPad, then I copy it out on paper, and then I do my work on the iPad, and then I copy the answers down on paper, and then I take the answers back into my iPad. And that was like a massive workflow eye-opener to me in terms of, well, setting homework on the iPad that has to be done on the iPad, and then the answers have to be sent in on the iPad is probably not the best thing to do. But intuitively, that made total sense to me. But in fact, the actual workflow was terrible. So we're going to learn through iTunes U. We've already identified a few issues and gotchas and things that I think we should probably discuss. And I've certainly sent these back to Apple, and I hope that over time, a lot of these things will be kind of ironed out.
Well, I think that's the key, is to communicate this stuff back to Apple, because if you don't communicate it, then they don't know. I mean, they don't have teachers on staff teaching this in classrooms. They build the best thing they can, and then I've seen a lot of instances that Apple will listen if you just communicate to them, and enough people having the same issue or the same workflow problems, they will listen.
Yeah, and I think this is, it's also very much a kind of, we're now doing this in K-12, whereas using it in a university setting is, again, very different, because the amount of interaction between a lecturer and any one student in their course is usually substantially less than the interaction between a classroom teacher and all the pupils in their class. So just, you know, quite briefly, a couple of things that we've identified with the current version of iTunes U. The biggest one that we bumped into was that every time you want to take a material, say a file or a video or something, that appears in the iTunes U interface like an assignment. That's the terminology that's used in the interface, is posts and assignments. And an assignment is any piece of material attached to a post in the course. Right? Now, the problem with that is that in the classroom, we want to use iTunes U. Sometimes I can stand up in front of the class and say, right, kids, today we're going to look at this multi-touch textbook that I made. Everybody go and download it from today's lesson on iTunes U, and then we'll look at it. Right? So that's an example of a digital material that we want to use in the classroom on the day. Right? But that appears to the student like it's an assignment. Download this book. And that's in their assignment list. Even though it's not really an assignment, we're just using it to distribute materials. There is a workaround for that, but it makes it less obvious how to do that. The workaround is to post it in your materials for your course, but not actually attach it to a post in the post section. In that case, you would have to say, go into the materials tab, go into the book section and find this book and download it and then open it. So it's a little bit more involved, whereas if you attach it to a post, you can just say, here's today's lesson and here's the materials that you need to complete this lesson. So what we've had to do there is we've had to kind of develop a protocol on top of this where we say anything that looks like an assignment in iTunes U and has the word homework in it is something you've got to hand in. If it doesn't have the word homework, it's probably something that we're just going to use in class. So we've had to kind of layer on a little bit of extra semantics on top of what the interface already provides. And hopefully in the future, we would really like it if we could have, we could attach material to a post without it necessarily being called an assignment and going into the assignments list. That's probably our number one feature request so far, actually. What else have we got? We've got, there's no support for shared logins, right? So if two teachers teach the same course, either you have to create another Apple ID for that pair of teachers to share, or one teacher makes a course and the other teacher just uses their username and password to put stuff on the course. Now, the first one is obviously more secure and much cleaner, but that doesn't scale because the number of combinations of teachers that you may have in a large school is enormous, whereas in a smaller school, we can just about get away with that. But even already we've started sharing login details because it's just not sustainable, the number of people who might be in a class one day and need access to the course. So I think that's another thing that is kind of new from the university experience to the K-12 experience, is that multiple teachers in one class is a much more common thing in K-12 than it is at university. I'm not saying it's not a university, but yeah.
Yeah, we have that situation starting in third grade in our third, fourth, and fifth. And RENWEB, our student information system, really does that well. There's teacher one and teacher two, and both of them can see and access, can view grades and can post grades, and it really works out well. And that does seem like something that Apple, as they grow within the K-12 environment and see that, it seems like something they would add, like an authorized user.
Yeah, because there's already some support for giving people permission to do things, because I, as the public site manager, have to give people access to Course Manager already. So if I could just kind of combine that with, you know, these two people can access this course and these two people can access that course. But at the same time, you don't want to make it so that the site manager has to build up all the courses for all the teachers. Because what is quite nice about the way Course Manager works right now is that every teacher has basically total autonomy to go and build as many courses as they like. They've got to log into Course Manager. They can make any number of courses in there, and they don't have to ask me to set up a course for them. Whereas if it was shared, hopefully that granting access to the course could actually be done teacher to teacher, rather than having to go through the person who runs the Course Manager. What else we got? Next biggest complaint I got from teachers was that there was no support for using Course Manager on iOS. And it's really interesting because although we're very heavily iOS and iPad school, all of our teachers still have a laptop of some description. Most of them, it's a Mac of some type. But the way that they behave with their laptop has really changed over the past couple of years. So what you see now is that instead of walking about the school with their laptop under their arm, the laptop comes in at 9 o'clock, goes on the desk, and doesn't leave the desk until 3 o'clock. And when the teachers walk around the school, they're walking around with their iPad, right? And I'm actually the most extreme example of this year, but I don't have my own classroom at all for any class that I'm teaching this year. So one day I'm in an English classroom, the next day I'm in a science classroom or whatever. And I really want to just be able to take my iPad around, but I also want to be able to post stuff to iTunes U without having to walk back to wherever my computer is on a desk somewhere. So that's something that we really think is quite important going forward. Now, obviously, uploading large files from iOS to a website is not something that's ever been easy or whatever. But I guess there's two ways you could look at this. Maybe either one, there's a restricted interface for iOS on the web. If all I could do was just like put out a post through my iPad, that would be a great start. I guess the other option is you actually build something into the iTunes U app that lets you, you know, because it's all tied to an Apple ID, you know, if I'm known, that Apple ID is known as the administrator of certain courses, I could maybe, you know, flip the bookcase around and get access to editing some parts of the course as well, right on the device. That would be super nice.
Is there I'm just thinking of an example that we had a teacher that this past year got pregnant and she did not come back. And let's say we were using iTunes U and she had built three or four courses that we really wanted to save. Is there like an export option where we could export all of that out of Course Manager into one account and re-import it into another Apple ID?
Not at the moment, not as far as I know. There is now support for duplicating a course. So if I build a course 1 year, I can duplicate it and then edit the copy. But what we're saying to teachers as a sort of best practice is don't write your course directly in Course Manager. We're encouraging people to write their course in whatever they want to write in, Evernote, Word, Pages, whatever, and then copy and paste your work into Course Manager, right? So Course Manager is not so much a course creation tool as it's a course upload tool or a course delivery tool. So that it's easy to keep your course in your Word file or whatever, and then just paste it chunk by chunk into Course Manager as you go. Okay, so those were pretty much our core issues with iTunes U. We certainly found a few other things that were much more trivial by comparison. But I think the next area we focused on a little bit was in the notes interface in the app. You've always been able to take typed notes in iTunes U, but what we found, and some teacher said this to me, is like, well, I'm always putting a diagram up on the board and the kids will just draw it on their iPad. There's no way to have a sketch pad in iTunes U or even take a photograph and put that in as part of the note. The only thing a note can be is plain text. And in the case of a book, the note can be a highlighted passage from the book with an annotation. And there's actually some very nice syncing both ways between iBooks and iTunes U for that. But there's no way for the kids to just capture a picture and put that in their notes as well. So that was one of the things. And then the second thing was transfer of notes between students. So the iTunes U application does support emailing a note. So you'll take a note, hit the action button and choose the email, and it'll come up with a composer and you can send that note to someone else. But then there's no support on the other end for bringing that email directly back into iTunes U. So what you can do is you can obviously just copy and paste the text and paste it into your copy of iTunes U. But there's no support for, you know, say a world did happen where that note was rich and it had an image and it had some drawing in it and so on. It would be really nice to just be able to import all of that in one go into, you know, a student that was maybe absent or something. They could just import those notes right into their iTunes U as well. So that's kind of a second order feature request, I guess.
What method are you using to communicate these feature requests back to Apple?
Bug reports. So Apple has a public a bug filing system called Radar, which you have to have a free developer ID. I think there may also be an email feedback address for iTunes U, but one of the ways that we do this is just by filing bugs and say and highlighting that this is against iTunes U, either course manager or the app or something like that, and just saying what it is we think we need and what we have, and just make it clear the changes that sort of need to happen. Yeah, I'm kind of at the end of my important complaints about iTunes U. I think overall, you know, to be honest with you, overall, the experience has been very positive so far. Okay, we're only a day or so into it. The biggest hurdle we actually found in practice was that iTunes U really wants to sync your subscriptions and your read and unread status and stuff through iCloud. And because we are on a shared Apple ID model, what I've got already, and I have to deal with this tomorrow when I go into school, is we've got a few kids who are saying, you know, sir, how come I'm subscribed to somebody else's course, right? And what's happened is that what child A has turned on syncing and subscribed to 5 courses, and then child B, whose iPad's on the same Apple ID, has also turned on syncing, and suddenly child A's courses appear in child B's iPad, right? So this is one of these unfortunate features of the shared Apple ID model. So it's one of these things that iTunes U doesn't really work that well, either in a shared ID model or even in a shared device model. It's very much a personalized thing. And we're moving slowly towards having all of our students on their own Apple ID for exactly this reason. Because one of the boys asked me straight away, he said, if I install that on my phone, can it sync with my iPad? And the answer is, technically, yes, that's possible, but because your phone's on your Apple ID and your school iPad's on my Apple ID, then that's not actually going to happen for you. So the world is clearly driving towards one Apple ID per student. And I think we're just about getting by with shared Apple IDs this year. But I think longer term, and as iTunes U gets deeper, we will probably really, really want to have individual Apple IDs for every student.
Well, I guess, and really do, if you can really make it through this year on a wing and a prayer on shared Apple IDs, your, I guess, hope is definitely by next summer you would have access to the volume purchase program. And I guess if I'm remembering right, this is the last year of your original deployment. So you, next year you should have new devices, single user Apple IDs, and the volume purchase program.
Yes, that all of that's true. We're looking at a refresh probably, certainly in the summer of next year. To what device? I don't know. I'm assuming we're going to stay with iOS, but there may or may not be new devices between now and then. I certainly hope there will be a new device. And, you know, our wishes for the future of iPads is maybe another topic for another time. But I think it will be nice to start again. This summer, we've already mentioned a little bit about this in previous shows, but this summer for us has been a bit of a reboot, because what we did this year was we took all of the devices in and we just wiped them all and gave it back to the kids with some apps on it, but basically none of their data from previous years. So next year, once we sort of establish the fact that, well, your data goes away every year, then we can start to move to new Apple IDs. And with volume purchase, I think that will be very effective. That will also let us at that point use the class rosters as well. So we won't have to do this trick where we put it in our public site manager and then hide the course from public view. Teachers will just be able to have their own course and send it to their kids, and there won't be any of that central coordination that we're doing at the moment.
Did you have any issues when you rolled out your iPads this year of kids complaining about not getting the same device back that they turned in?
Not too many. One or two kids had screens that were maybe slightly less than perfect condition, and they noticed that. But what they were mostly saying, rather than just complaining about it, they were saying, oh, I think the screen's cracked. And in fact, it wasn't cracked. It was just a little scratch on the display. So not too many complaints on that so far. But it has only been 2 days, so people might decide to complain by the end of the week. Who knows?
Yeah, last week was our first full week. And I'll tell you, it's amazing how exhausted I was by the end of the week. I don't know what it was about school being back in, but I was flat out exhausted.
Yeah, I've certainly got a queue of things. I mean, we had a lightning storm last night, which is pretty unusual for here, and that killed one of our switches this morning. But it killed the switch that kind of served the peripheral part of the network. So I had one teacher on the phone going, oh, the network's not working in my classroom, and the base station is blinking orange, and nobody else was complaining. So I'm like, oh, what does that mean? You know. So eventually I found the thing that had died, and that was that. And there have been other little niggly things in the redeployment as well. You know, this person's email is not working. And one of the things I did this year for the first time was I had the kids set up their own passcodes, because all the devices were enrolled in Meraki. And then I just pushed out a requirement for a passcode. And then I had two or three teachers come to me and say, oh, this child has put in their passcode wrong and they can't remember what it is and so on. So I had a little list of people I had to go right through and erase their passcodes from their device, and then they could set it again. But, you know, the software worked as advertised and certainly made life a little bit easier.
The price of Meraki Systems Manager, you really can't.
Yeah, we love free. And, I mean, that's one of the beauties of iTunes U as well, is that the kind of capabilities that I've been describing here, a lot of schools pay a lot of money for software that can do this kind of thing. You know, in England, several years ago, it was declared that every school had to have what we call a virtual learning environment, and what is usually termed a learning management system in the US. And a lot of schools went out and paid pretty good money to commercial companies to provide them with software that essentially did what iTunes U does for free. Now, of course, iTunes U isn't really free, because you have to pretty much put an iPad in everybody's hands in order for it to be useful. But this is one of these kind of hidden benefits of going one-to-one. And a conversation I have a lot these days is, you know, people often kind of rail against Apple's vertically integrated model, where there's Apple's operating system and Apple's hardware and Apple's services, and everything's got to be Apple, and no. People complain about that a lot. But if you look at the way the mobile market is moving, everybody's moving to that model. So you've now got Microsoft, you've got Windows 8, and you've got Microsoft's cloud services and Microsoft's own tablet. And Google have obviously bought Motorola. They've got their own operating system. And of course, Google have got substantial cloud services as well. So I think the feeling I'm getting for that is that today, in this world, a multi-platform strategy is actually the worst possible strategy that you could pursue. Now, I'm certainly a fan of iOS, but I believe that you're much better off picking one of those platforms and really going for it, rather than trying to serve all of the platforms, in which case you never really end up using any of these advanced features, because you can't guarantee that everybody's got it.
I agree. Just, again, even if you... because I think there could be an argument in certain settings that a Microsoft setup may be a good fit. It's just one of those pick the one you want to ride and get on that horse and go and go all in. And so you can take advantage of all the benefits of it.
Yeah, because there are schools that I know of that have, they're using Google Apps. They've deployed Chromebooks one-to-one, and they're rocking it with that platform as well. And people often think of me as the iPad guy and so on. And of course, I'm happy to take that label if it fits. But really what I care about is one-to-one. And I would much rather, even personally, if you offered me one-to-one with Chromebooks and Google Apps or one-to-two with iPads, I would take the Chromebooks, even though I like the iPad better, because I think one-to-one is the most important part.
I agree with you. 100%.
All right. I like some agreement. We should have a fight sometime as well.
That's true. I don't – I'd may have to bring somebody on that I guess feels differently than us. Well, iTunes U, again, I think the way you summed it up was perfect in that a lot of schools pay a lot of money for a learning management system, and it's free if you use Apple's platform. And I think this is to the iPad in education like iLife is to the Mac in the home.
Mm-hmm. That's just a good way to put it.
It's if you looked at what a learning management system costs you per student, and then you figure out what, you know, iTunes U costs you per student, including the cost of the iPad. You know, that's a good way to start. So, I'll have a link to everything we talked about in the show notes. You can get that at outofschool.net, or if you're using Instacast or Downcast on an iPad or an iPhone, they should be right there in the notes as well.
All right. That's a show right there.
Good show. Yeah. I guess if you want to follow me anywhere else on the internet, on app.net, I am at Bradley Chambers. On Twitter, I am at Bradley Chambers. And then on the web, it's at chambersdaily.com.
And I'm spears.org on the web, and fs on app.net, and Fraser Spears on Twitter. Well, I have to confess, I've been pretty quiet on app.net recently because I downloaded a client application and then it broke with some changes that were made. So I haven't had time this week to go back and find another client app that's working for me. But we'll get back to that sooner or later.
I've been disappointed in you. I've been seeing you on Twitter and not on app.net. And I'm just kidding.
Well, the gates are coming down on Twitter even as we speak, so that transition may happen a little faster than we thought.
That's true. We've had a lot of great feedback for the show, and we really appreciate that. A lot of good questions, and we'll address some of those in future episodes. And if you haven't taken a moment to rate us in iTunes, we really would appreciate that as well.
Yeah, we're definitely keeping a track of the feedback that we're sent through the web and appreciate all of that. I guess just to explain what's happening, we started this podcast with kind of a stack of things we wanted to talk about, and we're certainly working our way through that. I think we're maybe about a quarter to a half of the way through that. And then after we get through a lot of those initial things that we want to talk about, then we're certainly going to bring in a lot of these topics that people are talking about. So if you don't hear us talk about it straight away, don't worry, it's in the queue. We'll definitely get to it.
I guess we'll see you next week.
Okay.